Ann Baker is on News Talk 1400 and 92.3 WOND. Want to talk with Ann? Call 609-927-1100.
Good morning, everyone. This is Ann Baker, together with my co-hosts, Dr. John, and especially my co-host, Brian Fitzherbert. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being here. I have one announcement to make, and this is for Dawn. Dawn called into the studio yesterday when I was speaking about marijuana. I spoke about marijuana, and then Matt Tennyson, actually his Matt Minute, also spoke about marijuana and the negative effects of it. And Dawn called in, and she said, you know, I'm trying to get away from the usage of marijuana. I've been using it for a very, very long period of time. And I promised her that I was going to at least look to see where she might make a phone call or find an organization that would perhaps lead her to a place, to something that would help her stop the usage of marijuana in her life, which she now needs. And so I went on the websites, but one of the things that I saw was in Atlantic County. We've got substance abuse services, and they've got for drug and alcohol, but the number to call, and this is a national helpline. I'll give you a national helpline first. It's 1-800-662-4357. But she can call in to any of the lines having to do with Atlantic County government, and someone will be able to direct her to a department with a telephone number, to a person who will help her with her substance abuse problem. And anybody out there who has a substance abuse problem, please take advantage of the fact that we do have departments in our government. Our government sometimes is an affliction on us, costing us a great deal of money for things that don't really matter. But this matters. This matters to a great number of people in our country. So if you are one of those people, or if you have a family member who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, please call 1-800-662-4357 or go on the website to newjersey.gov and put in there that you need help with an addiction. And you're going to find the help that you need. Anyway.
Good morning, Brian. How the heck are you?
Good morning, John. How you doing?
I'm good. I got a great question for you. I'm hoping that you'll love this question. They said two things that the millions of dollars that they have in their war campaign, the Democrats I'm talking of, and using Biden as the presidential, because today, you know, it looks like it's Trump on one side and Biden on the other, unless something drastically changes. But right. Unlikely, right? So come November, it's going to be between those two. And I listen, I must be nuts, but I listen to MSNBC. And I can't help hate them. But nonetheless, their whole campaign, if you believe what they say, is going to be one that Trump is a threat to democracy, as proven by his insurrection in January 6th. And number two, every woman in the country has to vote for a Democrat because of the abortion issue. And today is a very important day because Right to Life protesters and marchers are all gathering in the snow in Washington to express the sanctity of a child in utero. Now, this is a very, to me, perplexing issue. You want to protect the kids. To murder them is not right, obviously. It's wrong, 100%. On the other hand, if you force that issue and eliminate abortion or the thought that you might eliminate abortion in this country, you're going to lose, in all probability, the election. And you look back to 2022 as a proof. There was two issues on this, on that election. One, like, we hate Trump and his appointees to the Supreme Court. And two, look what it got us. We can't have an abortion under any circumstances. So, Brian, I respect your opinion and political affairs. What would your advice be in handling this very, very difficult issue?
All right. So two topics here. One, obviously, what the Biden campaign team is attempting to run on. And then we'll get to the life and abortion issue. So first and foremost, the Biden campaign can't run on anything other than Trump. And the fact that they're trying to accuse him of that he incited an insurrection, which he's not been charged with insurrection. He has not been convicted of insurrection. And that they can't run on a secure border. They can't run on a good economy. They can't run on improved law enforcement and justice and safer streets and cities. They can't run on foreign affairs, because you look at 21, you look at the Afghanistan withdrawal debacle, you look at 2022, Russia invades Ukraine, you look at 2023, Hamas fires rockets and starts war with Israel, and now we've got issues in Yemen in 2024. So you can't talk about foreign affairs as an issue. So they can't run on anything other than, I'm not as bad as the evil Donald Trump as they're trying to portray it. And that's why that's all they've got. And the second issue that is the more delicate one, and as you said, it is complicated. The abortion issue is complicated. There are those that obviously are celebrating today, which was brought about as a reaction to the Supreme Court decision back in the 70s on Roe v. Wade, and they've done this every year where they march for life, and they do this to focus and protect those in utero. Now, like you said, it is a very, very complicated issue, because the way the media frames it is you either can have an abortion or you can't. And again, what happened with Trump's Supreme Court that he basically shaped with his three nominees is the sheer fact that, okay, this is going back to the states. The states will decide on what they're going to do in particular instances. So you have Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis signed a abortion ban after 6 weeks, right? And then you've got places like Oklahoma that ban it outright. And then you've got places, unfortunately, like here in New Jersey, that literally allow abortions up until the minute before birth. And in some cases, you know, the left even talks about the desire of the mother, even if the baby survives the abortion, which, again, if you actually go in through the description of what an abortion entails, it's very heartbreaking. I don't know if anyone can do that. So when you talk about this issue, you have to be realistic, and you have to push this back on the media and the Democrats and ask them, what is acceptable? Is it like Europe, where anything past 12 weeks is banned, right? The left and the liberals and progressives, they always want to be like Europe. Europe doesn't have abortion bans anything more than 12 months, right? Or allowing of abortions anything beyond that. And then, okay, 12 weeks. We've, in America, even in a pre-overturn of Roe v. Wade, have had discussions about, is 15 weeks acceptable? And you go back and forth between 12 and 15 weeks. And we're having that debate come out in the laboratories of democracy, i.e. the states, in what they're doing. Like I said, Oklahoma banning it outright. Florida, 6 weeks. Is 6 weeks too soon? And that's where the debate comes in. And the question is, nobody asks Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, Sean Hannity tried to ask Gavin Newsom, what is acceptable? Is it 1 month? Is it 2 months? Is it 3 months? Is it 4 months? Is it 5 months? And really find out what that defines, instead of keeping it in the abstract to keep it a political wedge issue and a political issue to rally up one side or both in this particular case. And what Donald Trump has pointed out with the appointment of those Supreme Court justices that shaped and overturned Roe v. Wade and sent it back to the states was the sheer fact that he saved lives. For those of us on the pro-life side, our mission that we would like to assist, crusade, whatever you want to call it, is to try to save as many babies as possible. And in this country, we have such a 50-50 divide that it is complicated. If people believe in abortion, they are not going to change their mind unless something life-altering happens, which we've known and seen. Usually these are women that have had abortions that have regretted it and have become part of the pro-life movement. So at the end of the day, you have to have the mentality, how many babies can be saved and at what point? Because even if this becomes a federal legislative issue that Congress attempts to pass and a president signs, it's likely not going to be 6 weeks like in Florida. It's likely not going to be up until the minute before birth. It's going to be somewhere in between. And or it's kept at a state's rights issue. And if you support this, you live in a state that believes that. And if you don't, then you go to a state that does. So that debate, and there needs to be accountability and those questions asked. Joe Biden, where do you stand? Do you think abortion should happen after 6 months in the womb, 5 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, and get them on record? And they won't do that. And Gavin Newsom, in the Gavin Newsom, Ron DeSantis debate, Sean Hannity tried to do that. And basically Gavin Newsom just tried to run out the clock without answering it because he knows he can't define that answer, because those on the left, the progressive, they want abortions on demand and in some cases used as a form of birth control. So that's where I would suggest, look, the premise is to save as many babies as possible. We know that there are instances in states that have tried this since the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And what is, quote unquote, the and that's what Trump was alluding to when he was asked this in New Hampshire, that he was going to get something that's going to make everybody happy. What is that threshold? Is it, and again, not everyone's going to be happy, but at least you can be in a position to save as many lives as possible. Because remember, the Democrats used to do, when they said they supported abortion, that it was safe, legal, and rare, and it's not anymore.
Well said. I my question, though, is I agree with everything you just said, 100%. The Democrats will not take a stand or a position on this issue. They won't come out against late-term abortions, and 70% of the country, when they are polled, apparently, agree that late-term abortions are unacceptable. On the other hand, Trump, our nominee for the Republican Party, has been saying that he is pro-life, and that's his stand, and I agree with that. And that, but you have to win elections, and he's against cases of rape, incest. But he also, out of a mother's life, he also said that he's reconsidering this issue. And would it be beneficial for the Republicans prior to November of the election time to come out with a statement? Because the Democrats won't do it. Should the Republicans actually do a statement saying, if you agree with DeSantis, he has no problem saying 6 weeks. But the problem is a lot of women don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. So, you know, I don't understand that. But if you say no abortions, you're going to lose a ton of votes. If you say 6 weeks, you're going to lose a ton of votes. And like you said, the object is to save as many of these babies' lives as possible. And in 2024, what do you think? Should the Republicans come out with a statement saying, like Europe, we agree at 14 or 15 weeks, and we'll negotiate from there. But that's our position. So people know that they don't like late-term abortions, they can vote Republican. If they want to have an abortion on demand, they're not. But shouldn't the Republicans, like the Democrats, which refuse to do it, and the Democratic media refuse to do it, have a stand? What do you think, Brian?
So I think it's twofold. I think what you said, and then there's another thing to caveat. I think there needs to be a lot of informative campaigning, you know, talking about this, defining it and using these analogies and using comparisons. Like, you can bring up Oklahoma on a national level. You can bring up New Jersey, right? Two fundamentally different states in every aspect of life, right? Culture, religion, everywhere, government perspective. And then, you know, what did Florida do? What does Europe do? And inform that, hey, this is what's out there. What is acceptable? And if the party as a platform at the convention prior to the 5th of November, remember the 5th of November, everyone, make sure you vote. The fact that the aspect of taking a party platform position, what that may be, because in the past, it's always been pro-life, right? We want to do as much as we can. But that was in a pre-overturn of Roe v. Wade world. And we have this opportunity because the point, again, at the end of the day, like I said and like I keep saying, we try to save as many babies as possible. And if we could snap our fingers and save them all, we would. But we don't live in that world. And if we took a position that, hey, our position to start from is an abortion ban, or is it Europe's position as the rest of the emerging 21st century countries, right? That is acceptable. Because if we start in that position, the Democrats are going to say, well, no, we want 15 or 16 weeks. And that's where that gets dicey. And then do you start with DeSantis's position, 6 weeks, and then try to get to that 12-week standpoint, which would be, look, it's not perfect, but is that acceptable to the grand scheme of everybody in this country that when you're talking about the first trimester?
You know, Brian,
so, again,
that's good.
Yeah. What we really have to do is get every single Republican in a room and don't let them out until they have negotiated what they need to say, what they need to come together on this issue, perhaps with a gynecologist, an obstetrician in the room with them describing it,
theologian.
And a scientist and a theologian, absolutely, sitting in the room with them. And then they don't leave the room until everyone is absolutely certain this is what their view is on this very important issue.
I think that happened in Greece. Socrates.
Socrates.
But I don't
yeah.
think it happened here in the United States because they can't agree on anything, including the border or the budget or the appropriations. So good luck. This is going to be a very, very tumultuous time coming on those two issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan from Hackettstown. Good morning, Ryan. Welcome. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I've been listening. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you.
And, I was just calling to say that you guys are right that the Republicans and Democrats, well, the Democrats, but Republicans as well, don't tell people whether or not they're pro-life or pro-choice, especially in New Jersey. For the last 4 years, just recently they've come out and said that they're pro-choice. Bob Hugin, Jack Cittarelli, he just wrote an op-ed on it. Tom Kaine, they actually come and say that they are pro-choice as opposed to pro-life. And even David Richter, I believe Brian Fitzherbert's former opponent, was pro-choice, just running and establishing the NJGOP as a pro-choice party. And it was just Ed Durr was the only one who sponsored a heartbeat bill. I believe it was 12 weeks, and not a single New Jersey Republican came on, sponsored with them, even talked about it. So I think you guys are correct that we have to ask these elected officials at what time frame they agree that life should be protected. Because all the conservatives I talk to believe life begins at conception, so it should be protected completely. But I think the Republicans in New Jersey are not conservatives because they're telling everyone to pro-choice. And it might be the way that you say just to win elections, but we have not won elections because of that. I just wanted to say that.
Ryan, thank you.
100%. And this is where a Republican in Jersey is significantly different than a Republican in Florida or a Republican in Oklahoma or Texas or South Dakota. And this is one of those challenging things because most of the time, and we've seen this in South and North Jersey because there is a political difference between those as well, but even at that time, you don't find out where people stand on things because usually they try to mitigate any kind of primary from occurring, and it gets done at the conventions where just county committee is making these decisions. But even then, you don't even know 100% where everyone stands on things. And when everyone knows what pro-life means and everyone knows what pro-choice means, but being able to ask and pull that thread and define and having a debate that is based in science, that is based in what we have learned and know, would actually help because it would define things better for people to make more informed decisions. And if it's just about winning elections, and again, as the caller pointed out, that has not actually led to any success. So the idea of trying to skirt this issue or ignore this issue instead of engaging this issue and going on offense and defining where you can go, because there's a moral answer and unfortunately there's a political answer. And as much as we want our moral answer to be the right one, half of this country does not agree with us. And probably it's even more than that, that agree with us when we start breaking down those barriers of what defines what we can do on what that government entity political answer is. And that's why it's very challenging, because most of these politicians, they're too scared to take a position because they're afraid they're going to lose votes or they're going to lose voting blocks and even lose elections. And that's what's,
you
that's
could
what's
run
very
in 2020, sad. You could run in 2025, Brian.
I agree. I agree with you, Ryan.
Because, I appreciate the sentiment.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Kathy, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I, again, am sick and tired of hearing people talk about how we have to compromise. We've been compromising as Christians and as Republicans for years. We did the same thing with accepting gay marriage. And now look where we are today. We got transgenders everywhere that want to be going into men's, ladies' bathrooms and joining women's sport teams and et cetera, et cetera. Life begins at conception. President Trump passed it on to the states to make their decisions. And we all know what states are going to go for abortion all the way up to the 9th month. And New Jersey is one of them. Murphy said it right from the get-go. You can get an abortion in New Jersey all the way up to the 9th month. Well, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Why do we have to say 6 weeks, 12 weeks, or anything? We're not. Why do we have to make abortion always the number one issue? The Democrats know it. They throw it out there, and then all our people jump on it and try to fight amongst themselves. They're trying to make it the number one issue.
It's a winning
it's
issue
the
for the Democrats.
One issue in America anymore.
It's the winning issue for the Democrats, Kathy, unfortunately, which means the Republicans have to sit down, discuss. Really, it would be wonderful if they did have an OBGYN and a theologian sitting there with them, speaking to them.
They don't have that anymore. If you read and you're educated, you know when life begins.
Of course, but how many people do that, Kathy? You and I might. How many people do that?
It's so frustrating that the Democrats make it their number one issue,
yeah,
when the number one issue in the world is the globalists, the communists, the open borders, the sex trafficking. That's what's going on.
Yeah. But it's a winning issue for them.
If you're okay with sex trafficking, you're going to be okay with having abortion up to the 9th month.
Well, that's
for sure. If you're okay
with
open borders and letting all these people come in here, who knows who they are, what diseases they have. I just read something, there's an outbreak of measles. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know.
Let's make the issues for the Republican Party what really are the issues. And that is the safety of our country and the safety of the people in this country.
Agreed. Kathy, thank you. As always, appreciate the call. This is Ann Baker, together with my co-hosts, Brian Fitzherbert and Dr. John, on Talking with Ann. Please stay with us. We'll be back. Good morning, everyone. This is Ann Baker, together with my co-host, Brian Fitzherbert, and my commenter, Dr. John, on Talking with Ann on News Talk 1400 and 92.3 WOND. Call in line 609-927-1100. Brian, we've got so many things ahead of us before November 5th of this year. What can we say about what happened in Iowa? I mean, that's a pretty small number, actually, of caucus voters, et cetera, who chose overwhelmingly to choose Donald Trump. But what can we say? Are they in fact the beginning of a surge for Donald J. Trump, do you think?
Yeah, so what you alluded to, again, I hate percentages. I like looking at the hard numbers and comparing them to previous elections and turnouts and all that kind of stuff. And yes, there was less turnout for Iowa this time around in 2024 than there was in 2016. However, you got to remember, there is a foregone conclusion because you have a pseudo incumbent with Donald Trump. And what Donald Trump was able to do was he smashed Bob Dole's record from 1988 of a 12-point win. He won by 30 and then some in a four-person, really. I think there were seven people on the ballot, but really a four-person race. And he got 50% of the vote in Iowa, right? One state, very conservative state. Caucus is a little different than, you know, a primary. But it sends a message that, hey, Donald Trump has 50% in one state. And again, I emphasize this because why do we have an electoral college and not a direct democracy or a constitutional republic, right? We don't do by popular vote because the point was to give equal opportunity and representation from each of these states. So the president to get elected has to get the majority of each state. And that's what the electoral college is based on. And I'm saying all that background as a point because when you look at Iowa and then the next state is New Hampshire, which is Tuesday, which is very, very different. Again, this goes back to the previous segment where Republicans in Oklahoma are different than Republicans in New Jersey. Republicans in Iowa are different than Republicans in New Hampshire. And yet you see all the polling, and the only poll that really matters is on Election Day, but you see the polling and Trump is still cracking in the high 40s and in 50s in some cases. So half those that participate in the Republican primary, now again, New Hampshire is different. They are an open primary, right? New Jersey, we have a closed primary. Only registered Republicans can vote in a Republican primary, same for Democrats. In New Hampshire, as an open primary, you have registered Republicans, you have independents, which they call, I forget what they call, we call them unaffiliates here down in New Jersey, but they have independents, and then they have Democrats that can participate in the New Hampshire primary. And again, this is all going to be things that are attempted. You know, think about, you know, Rush Limbaugh and 2008 and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and trying to instigate in that primary. Well, Democrats try to do that, too, by trying to get Nikki Haley some extra support. And she's even, unfortunately, stupidly saying, I'll take support wherever I can get it. No, that's not real. It's not real support because those same people that allegedly are independents and Democrats that are helping her just to hurt Trump are not going to vote for her in a general if she's the nominee. So again, she doesn't live in reality from that standpoint. But what my point in saying this all is Trump is likely to win New Hampshire, and then he's likely to win in South Carolina because South Carolina is absolutely Trump country. And then you get to the Super Tuesday. So again, you have this built up, again, majority rules, right? And the delegate process. And all of this is just going to lead to the fact that the Republican Party, the voters, not the apparatus, the voters, the individuals that go out to compete, are deciding that they want former President Trump to be their nominee for the third presidential election in a row.
Well, what chance do you give, though, of Nikki Haley, who seems to have been the one that everyone was talking about that would probably win in New Hampshire? Do you really think she's got a chance? Because she really has gotten a rather wishy-washy about some of the things that she's been saying. And yeah. There have been videos shown of what she has said in the past versus what she's saying today. And believe me, we all change our minds because of what's happening in the world today and in our own lives. But do you think she's got a chance? And do you picture her as a possible vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump?
Okay, so everyone's always got a chance, especially when she's polling in the numbers that she is. She's potentially within striking distance, especially when there's variables like Democrats and independents voting in a Republican primary that may just do this and are motivated because they don't like Donald Trump. So there's always a chance. The likelihood is very low. I still think Trump wins New Hampshire comfortably. Probably we're talking about an 8 to 10 point margin. And again, shifting to your next question or your next observation, her wishy-washiness. Again, most politicians are liars. They will say one thing in one room and another down the street because they assumed prior to social media that people wouldn't even know about that. And people evolve. I get it. People learn things. They adjust their position. They adjust their messaging as candidates, etc. But she, again, it's like a deer in a headlight when a Democrat plant clearly asked her a question about the Civil War, which, again, she just didn't even respond. And obviously, the simple answer is the Civil War was started because Democrats wouldn't give up their slaves. It's that simple. Okay. And at the end of the day, her as an opportunity to be vetted as a vice president. Remember, Donald Trump is highly transactional. He's not emotional when it comes to making these kinds of decisions. He's highly transactional. He wants to win. So I will caveat that as much as Don Jr. and other individuals in MAGA, Matt Gaetz and the like, are not fans of her as a VP because she's not true MAGA, or she's only out for herself. She's not really looking at this as a bigger movement than herself, something that's bigger than her ego, all those kinds of things. I think she's considered. I don't think he winds up taking her. He can take someone like Kristi Noem, South Dakota governor, or Elise Stefanik, or Ben Carson, etc., before they consider someone like Nikki Haley. So at the end of the day, again, she is digging her own political grave by staying in this and saying the things that she's saying, because all it's doing is turning off voters that she will need. Remember, Republicans are highly individualized people that vote. Democrats are collective by nature. They will stick together and they will vote for the Democrat, even if it's a dying corpse like Joe Biden. Republicans make decisions. They stay home. They vote third party. They do all kinds of things as a accountability for something that they don't like. And I don't think Nikki Haley can even dent 40%, much less 50% of the Republicans in any primary, even if it was one-on-one with Donald Trump. So I think after New Hampshire, I mean, she's in for a bruising in her home state, and that'll be highly embarrassing for her as the former governor of South Carolina to get wiped out by Donald Trump. And again, with all due respect to her and DeSantis, this race was over before it even began. The fact that they wanted to try to take on a cultural icon within the Republican Party, who a lot of people have now perceived. I mean, how do you turn only the left and only the Democrats and only progressives can turn a billionaire with a supermodel wife and lovely children, successful with no problems, into a victim in this country by enacting all this lawfare and attacks because they can't stand them? So again, at the end of the day, that was a miscalculation on these individuals to get into the primary. Trump is the presumptive nominee. He will be the nominee, and he has a better than 50% chance of winning this election, because as we know, general elections come down to swing states. It's usually 6 to 8 states. And guess what? In those 8 states, Trump is leading in 6 of the 8 of them with enough for electoral college victory. And if those polls hold over the next 10 months, or he improves, because again, it comes down to 3 simple things: the economy, the border, and crime. And everything else we're talking about that affects everyone's lives, that's just gravy in terms of debate topics.
Yeah. We've got Matt Tennyson on the line. Good morning, Matt. How are you? Welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I'll just add something to this real quick. New Hampshire's a proportional primary, and that means that even if Haley wins, she doesn't win that many more delegates. She'll probably end up splitting in any way with Trump. So it's a moot point, really, but nobody's thought about that. It's not a winner-take-all. It's a proportionality primary.
Right.
So
right.
What are we talking?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, what are we talking? She's doing all this and buffooning herself for something that's not going to help her in the long run anyway. She can't get past Nevada in Super Tuesday.
No, and again, you have to throw out what we all assume is logic. Because again, most of these people that run, in their heart of hearts, they can't be this stupid to think that mathematically that they can win. It's whether or not they can leverage something at some point to get something for what they've done. Because remember, they're spending donor money. They're not spending their own money like Donald Trump is and defending himself with $20 million a month in legal fees and lawyers. So again, to your point, it's math. She can't win from a delegate standpoint. There's no way, unless her strategy is to deny Trump the clinching number of delegates and try to have a floor fight at a convention, good luck, or try to leverage that, hey, look, I have all these supporters that I can...
But some of the third party, she's not making sense in the thing. Trump's not going to pick her for VP.
No, I highly doubt it. I think she'll be vetted. I think she'll be considered. So that leaks out that he's, you know, giving the illusion of unity, because I don't think he likes her at all. He had her as UN ambassador. He didn't like her then.
No, I don't like her. I don't. She's shrill, and I don't trust her. And she's too connected to too many deep staters. I just think this is just a way for them to extend this out and even have a more. It doesn't help anybody at all.
No, it's a waste of money.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of primaries, but when the writing is on the wall and you have foregone conclusions, it's a waste of money, it's a waste of time, and you should be firing on someone like a rotting bag of oatmeal like Joe Biden.
Yeah, well, you know what? We saw Vivek, and I think he was a truly class gentleman when he saw that he didn't really have a chance, and he stood up and backed in glowing terms Donald J. Trump. I think he sort of cemented his place in an administration when Donald Trump wins. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Jonathan, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
Good morning. Yes. I just wanted to interject, and you did talk about it. You touched on it slightly a second ago. You talked about how these politicians act because of what kind of money they're getting. So that immediately, and it didn't used to, until the Sethism, I call it, of corrupt voters sunk into my brain and into how our systems are being run. I just want to ask this question, and I'll hang up and listen for your guests, but what do you think, for instance, the unions, especially the teachers union, 95% of their members vote for Democrats. Now, how is the average man, average woman, average voter going to beat a gang like that? Like, we have to work 100 times. It's just, it's an almost, and plus those people have family members that are going to vote almost for what they want, not necessarily what the Constitution wants, which is no debt, freedom for people, prosperity and liberty, right? Or liberty and prosperity, as the group would say. And the motto of New Jersey, by the way. So My question is, what do you think if we voted as a people to say, okay, if you're a government worker or union worker getting money from the government, you are not allowed to vote. What do you think our world would look like? Just for a second, think about it, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Sure. So there's all kinds of instances, because most government workers, federal government workers, for instance, don't pay FICA taxes, i.e. Social Security, because they have their own separate system, right? So there's a lot of this. And then, you know, you take a New Jersey example, right? You have half the state that supports the other state because of how enlarged the government bureaucracy is. And again, the best use of taxpayer money. And this is where we have debt problems and we have pension problems and everything in between. Again, you're supposed to be maximizing the utility of the taxpayer, not providing a job for individuals. And that's what's kind of morphed and mutated into, especially when you go back to FDR and the New Deal and all that government involvement and as an opportunity, as a competitor to the private sector. So to the point of how do we compete, again, it's coalition building, right? In the Democrat Party, you have the Democrats and then you have the crazies. Respectfully saying. And then in the Republican Party, you've got conservatives, you've got Trump supporters, you've got constitutionalists, you've got libertarians, you've got moderates, you've got Tea Partiers, you've got every lane that you can imagine. That's why we're a big tent party. And holding those coalitions together is very, very difficult. But when you have a debate, and you know, there's nothing wrong with bringing an idea like the caller said, Why would individuals, if there's a conflict of interest, because if I'm a government worker, let's say from a federal government standpoint, and Democrats always favor government workers, increased salaries, increased benefits, job security, you know, so you can't get fired instead of what Trump's trying to do, which is Schedule F government employees and make them at will employees that you can fire them for no reason or any reason at all. If these individuals look at this and, okay, I'm going to vote for the guy that maximizes my utility, and in this case, it's a Democrat, is that a conflict of interest? Because it directly affects you. The same could be said if you're not a government worker and there's someone that impacts your business, whether you're, let's say you're an engineer, you're in concrete, whatever that may be. Everyone has that direct impact, which is why we vote. So I don't know where that would take us. There's no harm in having a debate about that because, again, we've shifted the mentality because, and again, there's a study that came out. I have no idea how accurate it is. A study came out claiming that if the 19th Amendment was repealed, i.e. the right for women to vote, that Republicans would win in monster landslides in every level of government. And the study asked the question, again, to women, if you were guaranteed a particular outcome, regardless of party, right, for an example, if you were guaranteed a particular outcome that you believed and you were strongly behind and you would always get in every election for the rest of your life and in exchange give up your right to vote, would you do it? And that's a huge, obviously, most people, I would think, would say, no, I don't want to give up my right to vote. I want my right to make decisions. But that is a oddly interesting observation if this study is even remotely accurate.
It is. It's very interesting to give up your vote if you're absolutely certain that the outcome is going to be what you want it to be. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of
AI.
That's crazy.
It's AI. It's what people are saying about if artificial intelligence can figure out what it is that each and every one of us wants, needs, talks about, that AI can be the one who chooses who the candidates are and who, in fact, wins the election. It's really crazy. And I want my vote. I don't want anybody taking away my vote. I believe that thugs who are in prison, they shouldn't have a vote. I believe that no one who crosses the border who was an illegal immigrant should have the vote. So, but that's just me. And that's why each and every one of us deserves to have a vote. Because we choose who, in fact, is most closely aligned to what we think. Anyway, this is Ann Baker together with Brian Fitzherbert, my co-host, and John Baker, who drove me into work today. Stick around. We'll be back after the break.
You're talking with Ann on News Talk 1492.3 WOND.
This is Ann Baker together with my co-host, Brian Fitzherbert. And my driver, Dr. John, on Talking with Ann on News Talk 1492.3 WOND. Yeah, John, you just sat up straight and tall when I called him my driver.
Talking with Miss Daisy.
Anyway, Brian, there are so many issues in the world today. I know that the Chevron issue is before the Supreme Court now, and I know it speaks to how much power we have given so many of these departments and the minor departments that have become major departments in, like, the Department of, whether it's the Department of Transportation, the having to do with nature and the world, et cetera. But all of these departments seem to have given a great deal of power to those that have expanded government and who don't deserve power because it's not constitutional. Hmm. And yet, there it is. We've seen the government take on farmers and say that the puddles that are left on their land can be adjudicated by this department, and they can be told to do something to their land simply because there's some water left over. We've seen it with the rivers. We've seen it where farmers don't get the water that's necessary for agriculture because there is a 3-inch snail darter that a department says is more important than providing food for the world. I don't know. I think maybe we probably have to do a lot more investigation into what the Chevron case has to do with what's happening in our country, with our agriculture, with our forests, with our electricity and the GND. But the government has really shown that they want to have the power to determine just about every single area of our life. Is there anything we can do to stop them?
Yeah, so a lot of things there. So what this alludes to again is the government bureaucracy. And again, when we say government departments that are deciding this, remember, those government departments are made up of individuals, right? That can either adhere to processes that have been put in place, or there may not even be processes to begin with in order to carry out their job functions. And this is where, again, you know, unmitigated lobbying as well as relationships have a huge impact on things, which is why people try to do business with the government, et cetera, and to have influence over these types of things. And it's, again, it's a growth of bureaucracy of government instead of a laissez-faire type mentality of stay the heck out of the private sector or stay the heck out of most of these things and just only use government when it is necessary, not when it is turning into little nation building, empire building, whatever you want to call it, within these departments by these career bureaucrats that can't get fired unless they do something really, really horrific, unless you have something like what Donald Trump is aiming to do once he gets back into office, which is Schedule F these individual employees that if they start doing things that are not the will of the American people, i.e. the will of the individual that the American people voted into office, that they either stop that immediately or they resign or they get fired. And when you have that continued bloating in any bureaucracy, not just government, any kind of there's usually a repercussion, because in the private sector, when you have bloating and over this increased bureaucracy where you get top heavy and the triangle turns upside down in terms of leadership positions, there's layoffs because what's driving that? Profit, efficiency, sustainability as a business or an organization. That doesn't happen with the federal government because it's just a monstrous beast that we keep feeding because we have feeble people in Congress that just can't say no to increasing this massive amount of spending. So what can we do? Your initial question, what can we do? Again, that's where elections come into place. And we have people, and only right now, Donald Trump seems to be the only Republican presidential candidate or otherwise that seems to be willing to do what's necessary and do really difficult third rail politically challenged things because it's the right thing to do if you want to have long-term sustainability.
Well, we've seen what's happened with the COVID vaccine. We recently discovered that Pfizer did a study, but they surveyed only 23 people in 2021 to gauge reactions to its COVID vaccine booster before asking the FDA to approve it. This comes directly from Judicial Watch, their verdict, their news publication. And the Judicial Watch, which is a 501c3 that I support, it really digs down deep. It is composed mainly of lawyers who use FOIA in order to get the information they want and need to investigate. And when I read that, I thought to myself, well, that's crazy because our government insists that we get the vaccine in the beginning. In fact, people were fired in the government who refused to take it. But when you see that this vaccine booster, they chose to use only a 23-person study to get it approved by the FDA, that speaks to a government that is not working for us.
That's on the FDA.
That's on the FDA. But
100%.
But absolutely. But they're part of the government. They're the ones who order us around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the FDA has let us down, no doubt.
Yeah.
But the, there's, Ronald Reagan said it best, if someone shows up at your door and says that I'm here to solve your problem and I'm with the government.
Run.
Don't open the door.
Don't open the door. Greg, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
Morning, Ann.
Morning.
Doc, good morning. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
I'm going to go back a little. I had to answer the door. Abortion.
Uh-huh.
Our politicians have come up with a new way of circumventing non-existent laws. We're trying to get laws approved. They're relying more on rules, the new direction they're taking. It may be a way of approaching abortion to get some commonality between the 50 states. They're so diversified right now, nobody's going to agree on anything. And maybe a set of rules where they could buy into might be a direction to go, because right now we're trying to pass laws, so to speak, to solve the problem, and that it's not working.
No, and so this is kind of more of an emphasis on what I kind of alluded to. People can vote with their feet, right? If you don't support your current state's position, where it stands legally or otherwise, leave. If you do support it, then great, you're in a great place. But at the end of the day, again, this is where the question arises, whether or not this should be a state issue, whether or not should Trump get elected, should we try to find some kind of, when he's talking about that answer from a federal standpoint, do we do that? That's another debate too, whether or not we actually pass something or something could pass that doesn't create another division, because we are divided, because people who support abortion, and those that support life and believe that life begins at conception, as I have said zillions of times, there's no divide unless something monumental or divine happens to you in your life. And the fact that there are individuals, elected officials, that in a generic sense, I can't use words on the air to describe them because of the lack of taking a stand on what they really believe versus what the political answer is that they think to stay in office. And that's the fundamental start. Having a debate, again, the point is to save as many babies as possible.
From the federal government, it should stay at state, but just get them together as a group to come up with some commonality amongst them. The other thing, the new Green Deal.
Yeah.
There's a marriage that could take place that I think would work towards solving a lot of the discussion that's going on. AI. Those machines, if they put tie them into the problems and the solutions, I think we could probably they would come up with some answers that we're just overlooking right now. And whether or not it is feasible, that would be the bottom line. Is it going to work? And that's an unbiased opinion. It has no slant to it. So we're going to get the undividable truth.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with humans.
So AI is interesting. And, those listening that aren't up to speed on, artificial intelligence, just watch the Terminator movie series. Skynet is effectively what we're talking about here. And it all, again, talks about what is baseline coded into that. Me as a conservative, if I have ultimate control over an AI and what it puts in there, I'm going to use what I would believe is logic and values and everything in between. Democrats would not do that.
I thought you put everything in, and the machines are what are a process of elimination of what they're being given.
Yes, if we're assuming, all right, let's hold that variable, right? Let's assume that what you're saying gets put into an AI. Yes, I guarantee you the idea that white cops are hunting black individuals on the street is that narrative is going to be proven to be totally BS because there's no evidence to back that up. And any other instance, and that's what I think the liberal and the left media fear more than anything, because artificial intelligence will take the political narrative and the emotion out of it, and it'll be just done with simple facts and figures at a computing power that is a lot faster than any of us living can do, probably in decades and much even in a lifetime.
Right. Well, what it would do is give us reality if it's going to be feasible. You know, it's like today on the news, Texas didn't have any problems with their system as it exists. But they don't tell you that they were also asked yesterday to start conserving what they were using to arrive at a clean result today. New Jersey has taken it one step further. They've put a machine on the side of our homes where they will do it without having to ask us.
To lower our electric use, our energy
Correct.
Use.
Correct.
Well, that's why I don't have that.
That's a good idea. I didn't know you could have a choice.
Well, I haven't let anybody in, and I haven't let anybody touch anything.
No. They do it. They don't have to come in your home. They're outside. Or most homes have the meter outside. I don't know what your setup is, but they just come and change it. You may just want to ask them, did you change my meter?
I need to electrify my fence, apparently. So,
or buy a very big dog.
I like that. Oh, my goodness. That's crazy.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
Greg, the one good thing about that I see in the future for artificial intelligence, I hate that phrase, artificial. But if you can correlate data, and I use my profession, medicine, as an example, but you can apply it anywhere. You can correlate data for risk of disease, benefit of treatment, and look at the worldwide data on different treatments. For example, what has been more politicized in medicine than COVID? And we just heard an advertisement on ivermectin, which is the medicine that Corey touts as the ability to stop viral replication of the COVID virus. Well, there's a lot of data out there that says that's baloney, a lot. And so if artificial intelligence will take his trials and other trials around the world, and basically look at the data, just like you said, Brian, about white cops killing black juveniles and black men. The statistics, when you review the statistics, don't prove that to be true. But nobody wants to accept data as the absolute, but it has to be there. And so I think AI will be beneficial for some and denied by others who have political motives.
Yeah, as Absolutely. Always. As always. Greg, thank you.
Valid points. Thank you, Vern.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great weekend, sir. Again, the issues, you could spend hours just talking about the open border and the grievances that American citizens have against allowing illegal immigrants into our country. And then you go into the substrata, and you discover that they're only here because they're the Democrat Party hopes that they will become voters and that they will be the leaders of our country forevermore. You're shaking your head, sweetheart.
No, I'm just resting.
He's just resting his head. In any case, there are so many issues out there, and we really do have to begin looking a lot more deeply into them and then deciding which of the candidates that are running for office will in fact be there to talk about how to fix the problems. And I can only hope that, as we see, Donald Trump seems to have the numbers on his side, And if that's the case, he's going to be the nominee, which means that we all then have to work very, very hard to tell people what Donald Trump stands for, what he represents, what he's done in the past, and what he is planning on doing to with the future. So,
well, thank God we have talk radio. We have Brian Fitzherbert.
You bet.
Who is so well-versed in the politics of today, has experience beyond his years and age, and is able to demonstrate it with a vocabulary that is understood by all. And Ann, you facilitate that day after day after day, and that's what we hope for. And on the other hand, you got Mika and Joe spreading their lies left and right. So, you know, wake up, everybody. Listen to who you believe and do your own research.
Yeah, basically that's it. At the end of the day. Brian, as always, I so appreciate your time. I know that you've got somebody really special there that you're keeping an eye out on, a watchful eye.
You might be hearing some of that noise.
just a tiny little bit. He's getting to be a real radio observer, if that's possible.
Well, how can you go wrong if your name is Luke?
You can't go wrong. Absolutely.
Best name I ever heard.
In any case, Brian, thank you. And please stay well, stay warm, and don't slip on the ice, but have fun and frolic in the snow with your little guy. Anyway,
absolutely.
Yeah,
thank you as always for having me on with you and your listeners. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great day. I love
you. Have a great day.
Yeah.
Have a great weekend.
Yeah, take care. We've got Steve on the line for the last minute or two. Good morning, Steve. Welcome.
Good morning. Yeah, I don't know if you recall, but not too long ago you had Lars Larson on, and we were talking about this topic of AI. And I had mentioned that I heard on a radio program in the evening called King Commando. She said that, you know, she was citing a project that was done by, I guess it was a medical school or something, where they were using AI, and it was a theoretical experiment, I guess, but they wanted to see if AI could produce proof or justification for a certain procedure or medication, whatever it might have been. And so AI went ahead and it did that in record time, but not only did it do that, it went and created its own medical journals to cite as references.
Wow.
There you go.
There you go. Yep.
All right. C'est la vie.
C'est la vie. Hey, Steve, thank you.
They called it llama, not jamma.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, all I can say is thank you, everybody, for being here with us. We have a grand time when Brian Fitzherbert is on. Brian, who has run for office, who understands the ins and the outs, the dirt as well as the light, and has seen it all. Such a young man, and yet brilliant when it comes to politics, when it comes to his own job, which has to do with the weapons industry. He's got the mind, I think, a genius mind, but he has such insight into some of the issues that we face on a daily, just daily, every single day. We have problems having to do with a government that is not doing things for us. They're doing things to us. And Brian seems to bring his insight into it.
There's not always a cure for every disease, for sure.
That's true. In fact, the evil that we sometimes find, there's no way to get rid of it except through your vote. Anyway, please walk in God's light. Pray often and pray well. Pretend that the Ten Commandments are before you, and do what you normally do, but do it knowing that God is watching over. And make sure that you are a role model that others will look to and will live by, especially parents and grandparents who have children and grandchildren who watch them, who listen to them, but then watch them. Please make sure your actions follow your words. In any case, please take care of yourselves mentally, physically, spiritually and emotionally, financially and educationally, so you can take care of your family, your friends, your neighbors, and your community. Remember, you are loved. You are never, ever alone. God is always with you. He's the one person you can talk to no matter where you are, no matter what kind of help you need. So please take care of yourselves, and may God bless each and every one of us, and may God bless the United States of America. I do love you.
WOND Pleasantville. W223CO Atlantic City.
South Jersey's News Talk 1400 and 92.3 WOND.
WOND, live from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Atlantic City studio. Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Atlantic City, where you take the stage.